Hello, my name's Dave Emery. Now, this next half-hour segment, we're going to update once again the investigation into the bombing of the Oklahoma City Federal Building in April of 1995. For listeners who are new to the program, I've done a great deal of work on the Oklahoma City bombing. I couldn't even begin to sum up the information presented to date. Contact Spitfire, a tape duplication service I'll tell you about in just a second. They have numerous programs about the Oklahoma City bombing, including a lecture called The Militia Movement, Enemy or Pawn of the State, an eight-part series entitled Specialized Knowledge and Abilities, and a number of different updates of the half-hour segments updating the investigation into the Oklahoma City bombing. So again, I want to encourage new listeners to avail themselves of Spitfire and acquire that documentation. Spitfire, by the way, can be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1179. That's P.O. Box 1179. That's in Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. Once again, Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. The email address for Spitfire is A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, that's A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, at ix.netcom.com. Once again, the email address, A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, at ix.netcom.com. There's a list of and description of all the various programs available from Spitfire on the KFJC webpage. Point your web browser at www.kfjc.org. Once again, www.kfjc.org. And look in the public affairs section for the Spitfire section. By the way, people whose computers are appropriately equipped can also listen to the three-hour weekly program that I do on KFJC. Again, go to that website, www.kfjc.org. And the three-hour program is aired between 7 p.m. and 10 p.m. every Sunday evening. That's Pacific time. Now, as I said, this half-hour segment is going to update some of the information about the bomb, the Oklahoma City bombing. I have stated in the past that I think there's much more to this event than we have been told, and there's a growing body of information exhibiting that or lending credence to that. I do not, however, believe that, as some have said, including elements within the Patriots and militia networks, that this was a government provocation designed to discredit those networks. As I stated in the last half-hour segment updating Oklahoma City, the media coverage of the Oklahoma City bombing is not consistent with what we would expect in the media coverage that would accompany a provocation. A provocation is a type of psyop, and we would be seeing articles planted by the CIA and the U.S. Information Agency and various media voices in and out of the country talking about a fascist conspiracy and this, that, and the other thing. We're not seeing that type of coverage. Indeed, some of the profound indications of conspiracy or a wider conspiracy with regard to the Oklahoma City bombing are not only not being bandied about, they are being covered up. I do think that some elements perhaps inside of the government or with governmental connections may very well have been involved with Oklahoma City, perhaps indicating or necessitating in the minds of some a reflexive cover-up. But I do not believe that the government, quote-unquote, blew up Oklahoma City. That would, the media coverage is not consistent with a provocation. And there are, however, very firm indications that there was much more to this event than just Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols, and indeed indications of the wider conspiracy involving Middle Eastern terrorists and Nazi and fascist elements from Germany has not gotten a lot of coverage. A listener sent me a package that he or she downloaded from the Rocky Mountain News' website, and there is some excellent, really, really excellent coverage of the Oklahoma City bombing in the Rocky Mountain News. And all of these articles come from the Rocky Mountain News, and this is from their website. You can visit their website at www.insidedenver.com/extra/bomb/0603okc2.htm. Once again, www.insidedenver.com/extra/bomb/0603okc2.htm. This first article is entitled, Rest of Bombing Story a Mystery, subtitled, Despite Prosecution, Nagging questions about conspiracy theory remain. It's a news analysis by Lou Kilzer, K-A-L-Z-E-R, and Kevin Flynn, F-L-Y-N-N, of the Rocky Mountain News. And this particular article is from June 3rd of 1997. And there is discussion of a possible Philippine connection, which, if the allegation made by a witness is accurate, might indicate an evidentiary tributary running between the Oklahoma City bombing and the milieu implicated in the bombing of the World Trade Center in February of 1993. I've discussed some of the many connections, including Islamic fundamentalists that had been employed by U.S. intelligence in the Afghan War, in numerous broadcasts about the World Trade Center bombing. This particular section of this article is entitled The Philippine Connection. Nichols traveled often to the Philippines, where he married a mail-order bride. McVeigh's defense team interviewed a jailed Filipino terrorist, Edwin Angeles, A-N-G-E-L-E-S, who said he met with an American matching Nichols' description in 1992 on Mindanao, the hotbed of Islamic terrorism against the Philippine government. Angeles, again A-N-G-E-L-E-S, also claimed in his videotaped statement that his associate, Ramzi Youssef, participated in the meeting. Youssef, Y-O-U-S-E-F, is the alleged mastermind of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. In November of 1994, a month after the milk jug bomb failed in Arizona, Nichols set up a two-month trip to the Philippines where his wife was finishing school. Nichols left behind a letter for McVeigh indicating he might not return alive and that he should, quote, go for it, unquote. While Nichols was in his wife's hometown of Cebu City, Youssef also showed up there. He boarded a jumbo jet in Manila, planted a small bomb under his seat, and got off the plane in Cebu City. The flight continued, and the bomb went off en route to Tokyo, killing a Japanese tourist who had taken Youssef's seat. The plane landed safely. Youssef has been convicted in this crime, which authorities say was a practice run for a plot to bomb 11 U.S. airliners over the Pacific Ocean on a single day. Did a meeting between Youssef and Nichols really happen? Mage, that's Judge Richard Mage, barred McVeigh's lawyers from presenting evidence about a possible Philippines connection, ruling it irrelevant to the charges against McVeigh. So again, I'm obviously not in a position to state definitively whether or not this allegation is accurate, but this Edwin Angeles maintains that an American matching Nichols' description had met with Ramzi Youssef, the alleged mastermind of the World Trade Center bombing, and then later, when Nichols was in his wife's hometown of Cebu City, Ramzi Youssef also showed up there. So again, is there a connection between the World Trade Center bombing and the Oklahoma City bombing? That remains to be seen. I would note that the funding for the World Trade Center bombing came from Germany. I would also note that the Andreas Strassmeyer connection to the Oklahoma City bombing suggests that there may be some truth to the scenario presented in the book Blood Oath by Stephen Wirth and Carl Jaspers that maintains that the murder of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman and the framing of O.J. Simpson and the Oklahoma City bombing were both performed by an elite white supremacist strike team composed of law enforcement, military, and intelligence veterans, that group entitled CAUSE, and it maintains that the funding for Operation Thunderbolt, as the killing of Nicole and the framing of O.J. was entitled, came from a foreign country, in all probability from the context, Germany. It also maintains that the group, the CAUSE group, the Nazi and white supremacist group that dispatched Nicole and framed O.J., and according to an anonymous informant codenamed Skinner by the authors of that book, the same group had timed the killing of Nicole and the framing of O.J. to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the murder of Alan Berg, the Denver talk show host who was dispatched by the Order, again, a Nazi terrorist group, which also, according to one of the informants, got funding from Germany. Andreas Strassmeyer, whose name has cropped up in connection with the Oklahoma City bombing, at least one former ATF informant, Carol Howe, has maintained that he was the mastermind of Oklahoma City and that Timothy McVeigh was his protege. Strassmeyer, who was a security guard at a white supremacist compound called Elohim City in Oklahoma, was also the son of Gunter Strassmeyer, that was Helmut Kohl's former chief of staff. Gunter Strassmeyer, one of the architects of German reunification. The Andrea Strassmeyer connection has not received the attention due it, in my opinion. And one wonders exactly what is being covered up in connection with Andrea Strassmeyer. Perhaps, as Martin Lee has suggested in some of my interviews with him, Martin Lee, by the way, the author of the book The Beast Reawakens, it may have been some of the diplomatic connections to the highest levels of the German government that necessitated that cover-up. One can only guess, but there certainly does appear to be a cover-up in connection with not only the Oklahoma City bombing, but also the Andrea Strassmeyer connection. Research credit on the following also goes to a listener who once again got this from the Rocky Mountain News website. This is from the Rocky Mountain News of May 31st of 1997. This also is by Lou Kilzer and Kevin Flynn. It's entitled Prosecution Smooths Nichols Path. And skipping down about the Andrea Strassmeyer connection and its relative absence from the trial, that is to say the trial of Timothy McVeigh, yet in the trial, the only mention of this, the Strassmeyer connection, came on a defense question to Oklahoma State Trooper Vernon Phillips. Have you, in the performance of your duties, ever arrested an Andrea Strassmeyer, unquote? Defense Attorney Cheryl Ramsey asked. Prosecutor Beth Wilkinson quickly objected, and Judge Richard Maitch sustained it. By the way, Maitch is M-A-T-S-C-H, I may be mispronouncing his name. Phillips was a witness from the bombing scene, but, coincidentally, he had made a traffic stop of Strassmeyer near Elohim City in February of 1992. Strassmeyer's car lacked a proper license, and it was impounded. But mysterious phone calls soon came in, some purportedly from high U.S. diplomatic sources, demanding that his car be released to him, according to news accounts. Among the documents in the car was a copy of the book The Terrorist's Handbook. The jury never heard who Strassmeyer is or what his possible connection to the case was. By the way, his attorney, Kirk Lyons, a white supremacist attorney, was shepherded about in Germany by a fellow named Bernd Schmidt, who not only ran a martial arts school in which Nazi terrorists were trained, but he also doubled as a German governmental informant. So again, one wonders about the phone calls from high U.S. diplomatic sources that purportedly came in when Andrea Strassmeyer was stopped by this particular Oklahoma State trooper, but we have not heard a great deal about that. That trooper's name again, Vernon Phillips. One can only wonder exactly what it was that necessitated this particular cover-up. It may be nothing more than the diplomatic lines that would be crossed in this connection. But again, when you have an individual like Andrea Strassmeyer, a former German army officer with alleged intelligence training, functioning as a security guard at a white supremacist compound in the United States, and according to an ATF informant who passed a lie detector test, the mastermind of the Oklahoma City bombing, I think it raises some very serious questions. More about Strassmeyer and McVeigh, this also from the Rocky Mountain News, again, research credit on this to a listener, and this from the Rocky Mountain News website. This is by Kevin Flynn of the Rocky Mountain News. It's entitled Tracking the Truth, and it's dated July 20th of 1997. Of the relationship between Strassmeyer and McVeigh, Strassmeyer sold McVeigh a U.S. Navy combat knife and sheath, and later returned to buy a shirt, trousers, and leather gloves from him. They discussed the ongoing Branch Davidian siege at Waco, which hadn't yet culminated in the fatal fire. And again, one certainly could not connect Andrea Strassmeyer to Oklahoma City from this particular contact, but again, I think there is a lot more to be gleaned from the Andrea Strassmeyer connection than we have heard so far. I would also note that the allegation was made by Skinner in the aforementioned book Blood Oath that a Navy SEAL knife, in fact, or a type of knife patented by and used by the Navy SEALs, the elite seaborne commandos of the U.S. Navy, that in fact just such a knife had been used to kill Nicole and Ron. And as I noted in an interview with Stephen Wirth, the co-author of the book Blood Oath, or as Stephen Wirth noted in an interview that I did with him in 1996, there was a gray substance that was found on Nicole's throat that was never explained, and the Navy SEAL knife that was allegedly utilized for the killings does indeed have such a coating. So again, Strassmeyer supposedly sold Timothy McVeigh, among other things, a U.S. Navy combat knife. That again from the Rocky Mountain News of July 20th of 1997. More about the Oklahoma City bombing, this again from the Rocky Mountain News. This is from the Rocky Mountain News of April 8th of 1997. This also was an article by Kevin Flynn, last name F-L-Y-N-N. It's headlined, McVeigh Link to Phone Call Hits Glitch. The article reads in part as follows. Prosecutors can't prove that the most important phone call in their case against Oklahoma City bombing defendant Timothy McVeigh was actually made by him, the Rocky Mountain News has learned. And this is a very interesting glitch. Listen to this here. Because of a computer glitch at the private company servicing a long-distance calling card program, no record exists to show which customer made the purported call from a payphone in Junction City, Kansas, to rent the truck used in the bombing that killed 168 people. The computer system of Massachusetts-based Opus Telecom, that's O-P-U-S, which provided hardware and software for the long-distance calling card allegedly used by McVeigh and co-defendant Terry Nichols, failed to capture the personal identification number, or PIN, used by the caller according to data obtained by the news. Instead, prosecutors will have to appeal to jurors' common sense and a chain of circumstantial evidence they say shows that McVeigh was the caller who reserved and picked up the truck. Prosecution and defense representatives did not respond to the news's request for comment. The phone card was issued through the Spotlight, a newspaper of the ultra-conservative Liberty Lobby in Washington. McVeigh allegedly purchased the card in December of 1993 under the phony name Daryl Bridges. The FBI found it in Nichols' house after the bombing. I would note in this regard that the Spotlight newspaper connected to, among other institutions, or among other elements, Robert Keith Thompson, an agent for the Sicherheitsdienst, the SS intelligence service during World War II, and also an operative on behalf of the Odessa, the legendary and deadly SS underground, post-World War II underground, inextricably linked not only with the Galen spy outfit that I've spoken about so many times, but also through that, obviously, to some elements of Western intelligence. The Liberty Lobby very much connected to the milieu of Robert Keith Thompson, and an institution that is also obviously very closely connected to the Institute for Historical Review, the top Holocaust-denying institution. I would note that the Spotlight newspaper has been among those institutions that has been labeling the Oklahoma City bombing a government provocation to discredit the Patriots and militia networks, etc., etc. Again, it's obvious that there is a cover-up going on with regard to the Oklahoma City bombing, yet the media coverage, I do not think this was a provocation. The media coverage is not what we would expect in connection with a provocation, a type of psyop. And again, there's certainly not enough to suggest that the Spotlight newspaper was connected to the bombing. Still, though, it is sort of interesting that a Spotlight calling card was used to make this particular call. I would also note that the PIN number was not recorded by Opus Telecom. So again, one wonders just exactly what was going on with regard to that particular phone call, why the PIN number was not recorded. Another institution which has been quite vocal initially as labeling, or which has been quite vocal as labeling the Oklahoma City bombing as a government operation. Initially, however, its chief spokesperson, its head, William Pierce, had indicated that the Oklahoma City bombing, although regretful because it did cost the loss of innocent lives, was an act of war, and that the lives of innocents are often lost in acts of war. That organization, the National Alliance, headed up by William Luther Pierce, is the publisher of, among other books, the Turner Diaries, allegedly the blueprint for the actions of Timothy McVeigh, Terry Nichols, and whoever else was assisting them. Again, I would note that William Luther Pierce, the head of the National Alliance, initially appeared to indicate that in some of his initial statements that, in fact, Oklahoma City was an act of war by his milieu, not that the National Alliance was necessarily involved. Still, though, National Vanguard Books, the publisher of the National Alliance, is the publisher of not only Turner Diaries, but also the books Hunter and Serpent's Walk that I've spoken about in the past. Another interesting detail concerning what we have not heard about the Oklahoma City bombing concerns an alleged connection between Timothy McVeigh and elements associated with the National Alliance. This also is from the Rocky Mountain News of December 10th of 1997. This also authored by Kevin Flynn of the Rocky Mountain News. This article is headlined, Racist Isn't Asked Whether McVeigh Attended Meeting. A white supremacist who testified on behalf of Terry Nichols Tuesday wasn't asked about allegations that Timothy McVeigh attended a meeting of his racist group 2 months before the Oklahoma City bombing. Rick Kaufman, C-O-F-F-M-A-N, a former Arizona unit commander of the Neo-Nazi National Alliance, testified briefly about several phone messages McVeigh left on his answering machine in Mojave Valley, Arizona. But information uncovered by some investigators that McVeigh may have attended the group's February 1995 meeting at Harrah's Hotel and Casino in nearby Laughlin, Nevada, went unexplored. Again, I wonder why. Kaufman testified that he never met McVeigh. Racist militia leader Johnny Bangerter of Utah, B-A-N-G-E-R-T-E-R, a friend of Kaufman's, told the Rocky Mountain News recently that a man who attended the National Alliance meeting later recognized McVeigh as having also attended. Bangerter identified the man as Richard Isaacson, I-S-A-A-C-S-O-N, who, in an internet posting, once said the FBI briefly suspected him of being John Doe number 2, the alleged McVeigh accomplice. In the posting, Isaacson said the FBI believed McVeigh also attended an earlier National Alliance meeting at Harrah's in June of 1993. Phone records support that version. McVeigh, who at the time lived in Golden Valley, Arizona, between Laughlin and Kingman, Arizona, called the National Alliance's West Virginia headquarters on May 24th, 1993. So again, one wonders why that alleged connection between Timothy McVeigh and some National Alliance functionaries in the Arizona area went unexplored. Again, the book Blood Oath by Stephen Wirth and Carl Jaspers alleges that an elite white supremacist group composed of veterans of law enforcement, the military, and the intelligence community not only performed the Oklahoma City bombing, but also dispatched Ron and Nicole and framed O.J. And it was alleged by Skinner, the anonymous informant and also an alleged participant in the actual killing of Ron and Nicole, that the timing of this event was to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the murder of Alan Berg, a Denver talk show host, murdered by the Nazi group The Order. And I would also point out that it was alleged by Skinner in the book Blood Oath, a book, by the way, that contains information that has never been made public about the O.J. Simpson killing, that one of the goals of this particular operation, Operation Thunderbolt, was to discredit law enforcement and the LAPD in particular. I wonder to what extent that same M.O., the idea of discrediting officialdom and the government and law enforcement, may also have been involved with the Oklahoma City bombing. I also wonder to what extent Nazi and white supremacist elements with law enforcement, military, and intelligence background may have also been involved in that bombing as well. Again, this is obviously speculative. Research credit on the following also goes to a listener. This also from the Rocky Mountain News, and this comes from the Rocky Mountain News of May 13th, 1997, also authored by Kevin Flynn. The headline, Fortier thought Powell was moving to Colorado. The last time he saw Timothy McVeigh, Michael Fortier said, by the way, he was a former McVeigh associate who rolled over on McVeigh. Beginning again, the last time he saw Timothy McVeigh, Michael Fortier said, he thought McVeigh was headed to Colorado to join an underground racist group like the one that killed Alan Berg, host of a Denver radio talk show. Many people have impugned the credibility of Michael Fortier. I certainly would not view this as in any way conclusive, but it certainly is interesting in light of the book Blood Oath. Continuing, Fortier testified Monday that McVeigh tried to persuade him to help build the bomb by showing him a chapter in a book about the order. Fortier said he declined. That book, again, would be the Turner Diaries. That book was about was called Armed and Dangerous, The Rise of the Survivalist Right. The blueprint for the depredations of the order, as well as the alleged blueprint for McVeigh and company, was the aforementioned book, The Turner Diaries. Still more from the Rocky Mountain News and more about the indications that whatever Oklahoma City may have been, there was certainly more to it than we have been told so far. This particular article comes from the Rocky Mountain News of January 18th. Of 1998. This also was authored by Kevin Flynn and Lou Kilzer. It's headlined, McVeigh's Story Contradicts Evidence and Trial Testimony, subtitled Inconsistencies Have Not Been Publicly Addressed. One of those inconsistencies, McVeigh said he left a note in the desert for Stephen Colburn, an Arizona man who had contacted McVeigh about joining him. But according to trial testimony, that's not possible. A third party had to have been involved. Colburn never got the note. Taped to a high-voltage power transmission pole near Needles, California, the note was found on November 30, 1994, by a utility line inspector. He took it, and its significance wasn't realized until after the bombing. The inspector testified that the note was not there when he last inspected the tower on November 3rd. McVeigh was nowhere near Needles between those dates. He was visiting New York and Michigan. And continuing with the article, prosecutors implied that Terry Nichols could have taped the note on the pole. He was 100 miles away in Las Vegas at the time. But McVeigh, who doesn't hesitate to implicate Nichols heavily in the crime, didn't say that. The identity of the person who placed the note is still a mystery. And I would note again that there, whatever happened with Oklahoma City, and I don't buy the government did it line, although I think that elements within the government or overlapping the government may have been involved. Again, the media coverage is not characteristic of the type of media coverage that would go along with a provocation. There is, however, obviously much more to the Oklahoma City bombing than we have been told. However, that was not allowed to enter into the trial. The following also comes from the Rocky Mountain News. This from the Rocky Mountain News of January 9th of 1998. This is an article by Lynn Bartels, B-A-R-T-E-L-S, of the Rocky Mountain News staff. It's headlined, Seven on Jury Wanted Nichols to Die. And this is about the judge in the Terry Nichols trial. It's the same judge, Richard Mach, or Match, M-A-T-S-C-H, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, who presided over McVeigh's trial and would not allow some of the tantalizing connections that I've just discussed to be introduced into evidence. Skipping down on this article, Nichols' trial ended abruptly Wednesday morning when Denver U.S. District Judge Richard Mach announced that he would decide the sentence because the jury was deadlocked. Richard Mach also presided over the murder of Alan, of the trial of the order members who killed Alan Berg. I wonder whether to what extent Mach is an individual who was assigned these trials in order to limit, in order to affect damage control. That is not a statement I'm making, but I wonder. It is certainly an interesting coincidence that the same judge would preside over the trial of the killers of Alan Berg as has presided over the trials of Terry Nichols and Timothy McVeigh, and some of the wider connections not only to the order that killed Alan Berg, but some of the apparently wider connections to the milieu of Oklahoma City have gone unexplored in these trials. And again, I would note the book Blood Oath that maintains that the killing of Ron and Nicole and the framing of O.J. and Oklahoma City and the killing of Alan Berg all connected. Another interesting connection, perhaps significant, quite possibly merely coincidental, there was a suit that was brought against the makers of the ammonium nitrate that was allegedly used in the terrorist bomb that killed, devastated the Oklahoma City Federal Building. I suspect that there was far more to that crime than we have been told. It would not surprise me if there was more than one bomb, perhaps one outside and perhaps one inside. That, however, is speculation. This is an article by Karen Abbott of the Rocky Mountain News, headlined, Oklahoma City Victims After Explosives Maker. Hundreds of Oklahoma City bombing victims have demanded that a Denver-based federal appeals court let them sue the maker of the ammonium nitrate in the terrorist bomb that killed 168 people in 1995. Skipping down, also representing bombing victims in the case is Johnny Cochran, lead counsel for former football star O.J. Simpson. Again, I'm not suggesting that there's necessarily any significance to this. There are certainly coincidences in life, and this may very well be one of them. Nonetheless, I think it is interesting to see Johnny Cochran involved in this suit after the allegations presented in the book Blood Oath. I would also note that Stephen Singular, the author of the book Legacy of Deception, was contacted by an anonymous source within the L.A. legal system because of his work on the killing of Alan Berg. Stephen Singular wrote the book Talk to Death about the killing of Alan Berg that was made into the Oliver Stone film Talk Radio, and an anonymous source within the L.A. legal system contacted Stephen Singular with information that, in fact, O.J. had been framed specifically because of Stephen Singular's work on the killing of Alan Berg. So again, this may be coincidence, but who knows? Perhaps there's more to it than that. I was not satisfied with Cochran's performance in the O.J. Simpson case at all. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.